But thinking of confessions, in a long, long time ago, in a land not known to us, there I had heard a confession of a young one. He or she, I don't even remember anymore, came to confessional. But, okay, now say your act of contrition. Oh, my gosh, I am heartily sorry. Oh, my goodness. I was doing everything I could to keep from laughing. That was hilarious. Oh, so funny. I mean, what was this child really doing? Child knew, don't take the Lord's name in vain. You can say, I wanted to say, you can say that. That's not taking the Lord's name in vain. That's the innocence of a child, you know, to begin the act of contrition. Oh, my gosh, you know, it's just too much, too much. Anyway, but this particular conference, I'm entitling it Inferiority Complex. Hopefully, it's kind of a hard word if you say it a lot of time to get tongue twisted. Inferiority Complex. And I think it's such an important element to really discover, really study. And I think regarding my last conference, I think there were three or four people asked to have the sheets that my conference emailed to them. So I don't know if they found it. I already did it. And so if you didn't get it, let me know. And I'd be very, very happy to do any of this. Because I know I'm pummeling tons of stuff your way. And it needs to be digested, savored, right, before we consume. Anyway, the great little story. You do not have to be your mother unless she is who you want to be. You do not have to be your mother's mother, or your mother's mother's mother, or even your grandmother's mother, or your father's mother. You may inherit their chins, or their hips, or their eyes, but you are not destined to become the woman who came before you, or the man, for that matter. You are not destined to live their lives. So if you inherit something, inherit their strength, their resilience, because the only person you are destined to become is the person you decide to be. I read that and like, well, yeah, it makes sense. And I buy it. I believe it to a degree. And with these stories I'm getting, the book is, it's rather secular, which, and there's good stuff in here, absolutely. But let me take this story and say it's true to a degree, but let's fulfill it. We are to become, yes, a good person, but what kind of person? Yes, so much we emulate. We have our heroes. We look at different people. I wish I was like that. When I was first ordained a couple years, oh, I got to be like that priest. I got to be like that priest. Ain't going to happen. It's never going to happen, and nor should it ever happen. What's important is to understand, who am I supposed to be? I'm supposed to be the best version of myself. And that's not some pop psychological statement. In fact, a very, extremely, very good Catholic writer came up with that. I just don't remember his name. We are called to be the best version of ourself. How do we know that? Because God made us. We did not make us. We have a desire of what we should be. Oh, that's lovely, but who cares? And that sounds harsh, but think about it. I want to be who I believe I should be. Who cares? It's not going to make you the happiest. What's going to make you the happiest is whom God wants us to be. Again, who created who? God created us. We did not create God. That's not the big thing. There's just more of an introduction into this story, into this conference. Second little story. President Calvin Coolidge once invited friends from his hometown to dine at the White House. Worried about their table manners, the guests decided that they're all going to do everything that Coolidge did. This strategy succeeded until coffee was served. The president poured his coffee into the saucer. The guests did the same. Coolidge added sugar and cream. His guests did the same. Then Coolidge bent over and put a saucer on the floor for his cat. True story. What does that say? Well, if these people maybe were strong enough, just be who you are. That's all he wanted. I can't imagine. I want you to do everything I do. He didn't want that. But we get kind of, we have this inferiority complex. You know, I got to be someone else. Who do you want me to be? Who cares what they say? Just ask God, right? And one last one. I didn't mark it. I'm wondering which one it is. Here we go. A little boy was overheard talking to himself as he strode through his backyard, baseball cap in place and totting ball and bat. I'm the greatest baseball player in the world, he said proudly. Then he tossed the ball into the air, swung, missed. Undaunted, he picked up the ball, threw it into the air, and said to himself, "I'm the greatest baseball player ever." He swung at the ball again and again. He missed. He paused a moment to examine the bat and ball carefully. Then once again, he threw the ball into the air and said, "I'm the greatest baseball player who ever lived." He swung the bat hard and again missed the ball. "Wow," he exclaimed, "what a pitcher." So much of how we perceive is just that. What is it that we perceive? And he was clever about that, certainly. But, however, with all these things, in life we always have to be ready for some kind of humiliation. Fact of life. This brings up the question as to whether or not we're suffering from an inferiority complex. An inferiority complex was given to the world by a psychologist by the name Alfred Adler. This complex, it's not all that complicated. We can reduce it to really the following principles. At number one, everyone is anxious to achieve superiority. We have that drive to superiority. And secondly, we do not always achieve it. Think about when Charlie does not achieve superiority, and hopefully nobody here's name is Charlie. It's just a name I love. I just get a kick out of saying that name for some reason. So when, or maybe your husband, talking about my husband. When Charlie does not achieve superiority, he sometimes will compensate it for it by a substitute behavior in which there's still a drive for superiority. This indirect way of achieving it is what Adler calls an inferiority complex. Now, there's various kinds of inferiority complexes. For example, there can be the physical. Charlie may feel inferior around other men who, I don't know, maybe thinner than he is or whatever. You know, a physical instructor told Charlie that he will have to chin himself 20 times a day. And Charlie asked, "Which chin?" Cheap joke, I don't know. Then there's the social inferiority, such as when Charlie sees that he's not as socially popular as other guys. Then there's the economic inferiority, such as having been born on the wrong side of the tracks. If I was only born on the other side. So a good way to explain really to you how the inferiority complex works is really to tell it in the form of a parable. Now this parable I got from the blessed Fulton Sheen. Now let me interrupt quickly. I just learned yesterday that the canonization process for blessed Fulton Sheen has been put on hold, all because there's bickering about where his remains should belong. Like, are you serious? You know, that's too bad. Anyway, so this parable is about a muskrat coat. A muskrat coat. Remember, it's a parable. Who had the inferiority complex to be a mink. The muskrat coat showed his inferiority complex by having a very expensive silk lining, and his initials were embroidered on the inside of the silk lining. The muskrat coat had the sleeves rolled back because it looked more like a mink, and also wore a price tag on the back listed as $7,500, genuine mink. He liked to parade on Fifth Avenue in company with other minks. When winter came, he would always go to the cold storage with the other mink coats. He would never go to the cheap storage where there were muskrat coats. And the poor muskrat coat, he had his difficulties, despite the fact, he tried wearing mink perfume all the time. He tried to keep up with the other minks. He knew that minks were hardy and that you could sit on a mink. And he also loved to be sat on just to prove that he was a mink. But he couldn't take it all. He couldn't take that he had to do all the things he had to do to make people think he was a mink coat. He worried so greatly with this inferiority complex that he had. So he goes to a psychologist or psychiatrist, and this doctor asked him all kinds of the typical questions. Then the psychiatrist said, "You know the trouble with you? Your mother obviously was frightened by a mink." And then the psychiatrist told the muskrat coat that he's going to have to be given shock treatments, which consisted of the muskrat coat being put into a cabinet with minks. And you know what the minks said to one another? I smell a rat. They got so angry that they pulled all the hair out of the muskrat. So this muskrat walked around saying that he was the only bald mink in town. I don't know, kind of a weird story. I liked it at the time, I guess. But I think what Fulton Sheen was talking about is this inferiority. I mean, it was kind of obvious that you try and try and you try, and where do you end up? Worse than you ever, than where you started. That's a hard pill to swallow sometimes. So incurable inferiority, I know I'm pronouncing it wrong, inferiority complex. Humans, we can play this superiority directly or indirectly. Indirectly or indirectly. If one has an undue of superiority and plays it directly, then he comes like this big balloon that keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. What's going to happen? It's going to pop. The indirect are of various kinds. First of all, there are the dreamers. Now, these terms, Fulton Sheen came up with these. I think they're not so scientific, but they do explain a good deal. There are the dreamers, the worm eaters, and then there's the particular kind of animal called the tail-bearing animal. The first way of showing superiority is doing so directly. Here, Charlie is constantly using the pronoun I, which is affirming his ego, his assertion of his will. The person who shows his superiority directly is very loud. He's the loud mouth, perhaps. You know, they come into the room shouting and speaking very loudly. In other words, he's saying, I am here. Now, that may not be 100% of the time, 100% of the case. Now, there's the indirect type of inferiority complex. First of all, they are the dreamer. There are dreamers. They are unable to achieve superiority in real life, so they live in a world of fantasy where they believe themselves to be superior. When Charlie gets sick just before examination time, his fantasy is that if he hadn't been sick, he would have passed the examination. There was one man who made a fortune after he invented dynamite, and this is true. He made it possible, to make horrible wars, more terrible than the first, including the harm, the actual and the possible that could be done. So he gave us the Nobel Peace Prize. His last name was Nobel. In addition to this, there are the worm eaters. They cover up their desire for superiority by minimalizing themselves. They claim such great humility. Nobody loves me. You could say that they go to the garden to eat worms. They put themselves on a very low, low level. They love to go to the doghouse, and they're proud of being in the doghouse. They say, it's all right. Pay no attention to me. I'm just fine. So beyond the worm eaters, there are the tail-bearing animals. They are those who have a fine sense of rumor. They give everybody the benefit of the dirt. They are never happy until they can get something on someone. They whisper about the community and make themselves superior to others by pointing out the vices and inferiority of others, make themselves look good in public. I guess you can probably call them a bully too, right? So these are ways in which people manifest their inferiority. So what are we to think about this inferiority complex? So as you can see, it's really actually more of a superiority complex. This inferiority is known also under a very different name, which we all are very familiar with. And so certainly is simply the sin of pride. Pride is an inordinate esteem of one's own excellence. So what has to be conquered is not necessarily inferiority, it's superiority. Why do people today suffer from what Adler calls inferiority complex? Or rather, why do they suffer from pride? Well, simply because they have cut themselves off from the source. They've cut themselves off from the source. They deny any real relationship whatsoever with God, so they make themselves little gods. Now, they may not do that directly or even consciously, but that's what's going on. They elevate their condition character into that of an absolute, They see themselves for what they are, and well, maybe they don't, but whatever they perceive, that becomes great. That's the best. I'm the best. So they go around as a rather reproduction by calling themselves an original. You know, like back in the day, you could say they were a carbon copy and calling themselves an original. Fine. They say, nobody made me. I'm my own author. I'm my own will, my own redeemer, my own savior. But they don't like the question as to, all right, who made you? You know, they can't say, I made me. It's a contradiction here. You know, a pendulum in a clock it's free to swing so long as it's attached to the clock. As soon as it is detached from the clock, it's no longer free to swing. Just sits there. Charlie is like this pendulum that's detached from the clock. He's alienated himself from God and says, yes, I can swing. Pick me up in your hand and see. When we pick him up in our hands, we see how dictators are made. I'll explain. When people lose their sense of responsibility and lower their consciences to personal opinion or forget the bonds that tied them to their master, in other words, I become my master, they become just simply really mere things. And it's not long until a dictator comes along, picks them up, and pens them into his own will, kind of making them slaves. That's how really socialism is made, which I dare say we have to be very careful of in our modern time. Just saying. Okay, so what's the cure for this unhappiness that comes from people, you know, being so proud, vain, egotistic? Well, the cure is to be found actually in the virtue of humility. We've all heard it many, many times. Some think humility means submissiveness, like a passiveness, a willingness to be walked on, or a desire to constantly live in the doghouse. Oh, not at all. Not at all. That's not the meaning. Humility is a virtue by which we recognize ourselves for what we are. Humility is we recognize ourselves as we really are, not as we would like to be, you know, even in God's eyes, in the world's eyes. We may really think, I want to be this in God's eyes. Well, okay, now who's really God, maybe? I want to be like that priest. I want to be like that priest. No. That's not the way it works. Humility makes us see who we really are when we examine our conscience. That's why the nightly examination of conscience is so important. It forces us to look at what I've done that I shouldn't have, what I didn't do that I should have, or you get it. And then, how can I become better? You know, in any work, there are two things that need to be considered. First of all, the talent, and secondly, the limitations of that talent. So firstly, Charlie, he's got a talent for carpentry. This means he has the capacity to work with wood, and he's somewhat good at it. If he's a humble man, he will recognize that he has certain limitations and that he's not a watchmaker. So what about you and I? You know, would I be humble if I said I can't talk, that I can't preach? I'm no good at this. I can't stand in front of behind a podium and talk to 26, 28 people. I don't know how to give ideas. Or, there's 100,000 people better than I. Well, no. I admit I do have a certain propensity for preaching, a little bit anyway, and I'm pleased. I enjoy it. But I also recognize there's always room for improvement. And therefore, I must thank God for that. But again, as I say, I do need to recognize my limitations. Memorization, it's not my strong point. I've taken Spanish class so many times, I think only still know the first five numbers. You know, I just can't do it. See, that's a defeatist attitude. But what I need to do is say, memorization is difficult. Deal with it. Let's just keep moving forward. Sometimes when I get excited about a topic, I tend to lose my train of thought, and I start speaking really fast in an disorganized way. So the capacity that I have, what's lacking in those areas? Just to give you an example. So therefore, the humble being will recognize himself as he really is, and be very humble before God, because he knows that he's undeserving of his goodness. That's okay. It's a fact. Accept it. Let's move on. Whatever talents we recognize that we do have, then we will use them to the best of our ability and then be okay with whatever talents we do not have. Again, I need to be like that priest. I need to be like that priest. Why? Why? Oh, because people like him. So what? Maybe he's a fake. Probably not. I don't know. Oh, this guy, he can preach. Well, good for him. Now, we don't all have to be Father whoever's. I don't have to be like that mother, like that father. You get what I'm saying. So the humble will not have an inferiority complex about it. So in relationship to our neighbor, humility will show up by how Charlie always looks for what is best in his neighbor and always looks for what is worst in himself for the sake of betterment. And the humble person will understand the inspiration of all humility. Same as the God-man who came to this earth. And on the night before he died, he knelt down, took a basin and a towel, girded himself, and washed the feet of his own apostles. Not even divinity precluded humility. His followers will never suffer from what is called an inferiority complex, or in the language of St. John the Baptist, where in the face of Christ they will say, "He must increase while I must decrease." Heaven's very, very high. The gate to it is very low. Humility is the condition of entering in.